You've attended council hearings in person. You've tuned in to our televised proceedings on Channel 13. Now, you have the chance to listen to us on the radio as we demystify our work and the people who do it. This is not a council hearing. This is Hearing the Council with your host, Josh Gibson.
Thank you, deep voice person with a funky backbeat. Indeed, this is not a council hearing. This is Hearing the Council. You can't have a government without a council. So you can't have a government radio station without a council show. This is it. I'm Josh Gibson, Director of Communications for the Council. You may also know me as our voice on social media at Council of DC. And we are thrilled to be joined once again with at-large Councilmember Christina Henderson. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me again, Josh. It's good to see you.
Good to see you as well. So we are going to tackle a couple topics today based on time. We'll see how far we get. But the first one is the topic of out-of-school time and extended hours at rec centers. And because we immediately get to the topics that matter, I had always abbreviated out-of-school time as OOST and pronounced it in my head, OOST. But in email setting up this interview, it was OST, and I Googled it, and it seems like Montgomery County calls it OOST, but DC calls it OST. So are you team OOST or team OST?
Team OST is how we refer to it in DC. So that's right. That's interesting that we have a regional difference here.
We do. And do people pronounce it OST, or do they just tend to say OST?
I think we just say OST.
Okay. Gotcha. The remainder of the interview will be conducted with that protocol.
Okay.
So last week, you were out at Berry Farms with the mayor for a press conference announcing extended hours at rec centers. Why don't you talk a little bit about what was announced?
Yeah. So a couple of things were announced. The first of which is the announcement that we were going to be extending the hours for some high usage rec centers. Starting on March 27th, eight rec centers around the city will have extended hours, either opening earlier or closing later to respond to the community's desires and interests to have more time at the rec centers, whether it's seniors who want to see more classes or young people who say, hey, I have nothing to do after school. It would be nice to go to the rec center and not be kicked out at 5 o'clock. So that's going to be starting on March 27th, those first eight centers, and then more centers. I think there's an additional 37 who are going to start with extended hours starting in April. So that's huge. The whole purpose of this is sort of gearing up towards summer and making sure that we are providing opportunities for young people in the community to do things outside that are productive and fun and a learning opportunity, but to just also keep you out of trouble. So that was a big thing. The second large announcement was a new change to the lottery system for signing up for summer camps and for high interest programs like Learn to Swim and tennis. If you have ever sort of been online during a camp sign up day or anything like that, you know that is like one of the days that people have, they have the ire for DPR, similar to what they have for Ticketmaster. Anytime you're trying to get tickets for a high demand concert, you only had one day, one time to try to get in line and secure a slot for your child. And unfortunately, if you, let's say, had a job that didn't allow you a time for a break at noon on a Tuesday in order to refresh and hope for a slot, you are out of luck for your kid. And what we're finding is for many families who don't have options outside of the DPR system, their young people were just out of luck. And so I, last year, after we had a snafu with the DPR signup site for spring programming, I don't know if some of your viewers remember this, the system crashed, the website failed completely. And so we have been working with DPR to sort of modify some changes. One of the things that I kept saying is, like, with all of this technology that we have out in the world today, there has to be a better way for us to deliver a more equitable signup system that residents will see as fair in terms of them getting options. So that was the second thing. And then the third thing that DPR announced, which is great, is that they're hiring. 600 positions. And so it's an opportunity for folks, especially in the lifeguard space, to get trained before getting hired. And, you know, we pay very well for our lifeguards and other things in the summertime. And so this is an opportunity for young people or part-time workers or folks who've been out of work to perhaps consider a new job career path and then come work with us at DPR this year.
Gotcha. Let's quickly go back to the summer camp sign-up issue. Yeah. When we were doing COVID vaccines, you know, we had one round, I can't remember, one or two rounds that were hellish, that were, you know, Hunger Games, survival fittest. But then we pretty quickly pivoted to a lottery system.
Correct.
What I'm wondering is, we've been doing summer camp for years. We've even been doing summer camp online for years. Mm-hmm. Why did it take so long? Like, the learning curve was much faster on COVID.
You are asking an excellent question. But I think for some people too, like, change is hard. We'll start there. That's first. Change is hard. And there were people who had managed to game the system. They have, you know, three or four laptops that were open, aunties, grandmas, you know, uncles and cousins who were also trying to register on the system to try to like get a spot and get a place. But what I also learned from this process is that when it comes to parks and rec across the country, in terms of website signups or activity signups, there's one company that literally every parks and rec department across the country, major parks and rec department, were using. One company. And so if you don't have an incentive because you have a monopoly on the marketplace to innovate or try something new, there's no avenue to do that. And so, you know, last year, the system crashed for spring programming signup. There was a quick conversation of like, this cannot happen for summer camp. So one of the most immediate things that they were able to introduce was the queuing system. So when you sign onto the website, you know, you're put into a line, and then only certain number of people are allowed on the website at any given time to make sure that the system doesn't crash from a bandwidth perspective. And so that was great. But again, it was still a singular point in time. The new system that was announced will allow for families to sit down, review the camp offerings, and they have 3 weeks to do so, a little bit more than 3 weeks to do so. And then you get to rank what you're looking for each session, up to three options. And then we'll run a lottery, and then we'll see where things land on the other side. Now, we know with lottery systems, especially say like My School DC, not everybody will be matched with something that they are looking for. But the hope is that people feel like they had a fair shot to get their kids signed up for camp. Now, my understanding from Director Hunter is that they're going to be making some other changes in the fall that they couldn't necessarily do here in the summertime. So for instance, what they have in the summer, they will have a sibling preference, which is great, right? So if you have multiple kids, you know, you can have that sibling preference. So you could do one drop off for summer camp as opposed to, oh, my kid got in at Turkey Thicket. Oh, I couldn't find another spot in over at Deanwood. That doesn't really work for families either, right? Having to go to multiple locations for a summer camp opportunity. One of the other things that I am hoping that DPR will also look at is whether there could be a proximity preference so that families can have priority at the rec center that's closest to their home. That also helps for families who say don't have a vehicle to travel. It's much easier for your kids to perhaps walk the three blocks to the rec center for summer camp, as opposed to you having to maneuver how to get them across the city for something because, you know, all the programming in your neighborhood was taken up very quickly. So, you know, that's another kind of thing. And then the other is like, what additional things, preferences can we put in place for families who are of a lower economic status, who need the DPR programs because that is the only price point available to them to provide something safe for their kids to do over the summer. You know, families like you are mine. If we don't get a DPR slot, we have other options that are available to us. But for some families, they need this. And so we want to make sure that those kids can get connected. Because unfortunately, what we hear is like for a lot of these young people, if your family isn't successful in getting a DPR slot, you're just sitting at home all summer. And we know that's not productive.
Right, Right. I mean, I think the new process in general is better from an equity standpoint, because you can't do, like you said, have six devices. You know, if I have a phone and an iPad and a laptop and my wife does, you know, we can't all get on our devices. So it, and we don't have, you know, we, like you were pointing out, the taking, being able to take the time off during the time the old system used to open. So hopefully that's already a big step forward for equity. And then what you're talking about would be even more important on top of that. From a contracting standpoint, did we start all over and create a new system, or were we able to recycle the COVID lottery system?
That's a really good question. I'm not entirely sure. I know that DPR was working specifically with Octo on, you know, a solution from last year, and then on whatever the solution is going to be going forward. But I'm not, I would imagine that we did have to start a new contract just because we're dealing with two separate agencies. So the idea that we would just be able to piggyback on one system when we're dealing with one that was in the healthcare space versus one that's in the parks and rec space, I imagine that there probably was some new contracting there. But it could be, I'll just leave
it. Just when you said that, you know, all the parks and recs department nationwide use the same contractor, plenty of agencies distribute scarce resources via a lottery system. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of crazy that parks and recs departments would only buy from parks and rec department lottery vendors. You know, it's a...
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, like, if you were in a particular industry and you're going to ask colleagues in that industry, hey, what's the best system? Well, they're certainly going to promote their own, right? And so you get into a situation where everybody's just kind of doing the same thing. You can think about it from, let's say the Department of Employment Services, for instance, they have been engaged in a project to redo our unemployment system website and system, right? It's been going on for some time. There's a delay, X, Y, or Z. We are using the same vendor that several jurisdictions around the country are using. So I guess in some ways we like to build off the expertise of a vendor in that area. But it also, at least for me, I was like, man, if I was in a different line of work and I was an engineer or a, you know, website designer, this seems like an area that's ripe for competition and innovation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So back to the first topic you brought up in terms of the extended hours at the rec centers. Mm-hmm. In reading the mayor's press release, and this, maybe I'm wrong about this, or maybe I'm just the last one to know about it, but the rec centers are not open on Sunday?
They're not. Not now for many of them. And then also, but I would say this, there were progress made in terms of extended hours, not just for rec centers, but also for, like, say, the libraries pre-pandemic, and then everything rolled back. And so I think we're trying to figure out a way of how do we get back to where we used to be, where, you know, sites were active and live and residents were able to access them at all types of peak hours. But yeah, just this weekend, I was trying to go to, like, Turkey Thicket for something, and I pulled into the parking lot and was like, wait, it's Sunday. and they are closed on Sundays. Yeah.
I mean, and that just takes my breath away. I mean, with all of the resources the city has and all of the, some of the things that seem like luxuries that we can offer at mm-hmm. times to folks, that just seems like basic bread and butter, common sense.
It does. But I would also say, though, some of this is about workforce. You know, I think that, like, if I think about the number of people who contact us about wanting more access to pools, not just at the rec centers, but the aquatic centers that are connected to schools, you know, many of the challenges originally in sort of providing those extended hours to the public had nothing to do with not having the space available, but had everything to do with they didn't have enough lifeguards to staff the pools for the hours that, you know, folks were seeking for them to be open for. And so I think that's why the third part of the announcement is so critical to this, right? Like, we need, if we want these additional amenities, we can't just open up a center and not have staff there. We can't just open up a pool and have no lifeguard. And so we need folks to be able to, you know, come in and do those jobs to allow for us to expand in ways. And so if folks know, like, you know, a young person who needs a job or someone who's going to be home, you know, from college over the summer, I hope that they will share the information with them that DPR is hiring. Now, it takes a special type of individual to do that type of work, right? If you don't like kids, don't sign up for a job with DPR. If you don't like people, don't sign up for a job with DPR. But for the folks who, you know, this is up their alley, they want to be outdoors, they want to have fun, they want to, you know, teach, instruct classes or whatnot, DPR is needing folks to do so. And without those folks, we can't expand the slots. We can't do, you know, all the things that residents are asking for.
And of those 600, and you might not know this, are those mainly the seasonal summer work like lifeguards, or a lot of those full-time employment?
So my understanding is that they are setting up the program by which you start a seasonal, but then you are able to transition to more full-time work. So at the press conference, there was a young woman who sort of wrapped up things at the end. She's the pool manager now at Berry Farm, but when she started with work with DPR, she started as a seasonal employee. And now she's managing the pool there. So there's a career ladder opportunity for folks in this regard. But yeah, it starts with seasonal and then it kind of works its way up. Now, I mean, I think all of these are great. We still have much more work to do to make sure that, you know, when we say opportunities for all or access for all within out of school time, that we actually mean all, which we haven't done really a great job for folks with disabilities. And so we need to do some more work on that. But I'm excited to sort of partner with DPR on this. And frankly, I'm glad that we have a situation where there was a problem. It had to get worse before it got better, but it was a problem. And the agency was able to work fairly quickly to address it and come up with something new. So kudos to DPR.
Yeah. I mean, necessity is the mother of an invention, and it might've taken several cycles of frustration, but kind of hitting rock bottom with the system crashing last year seems to have kind of forced the innovation.
Right.
And on the lifeguards, it's great that we're trying to build homegrown talent, because I know that like at the beach, I think there's literally like a visa class where they literally import lifeguards from like Eastern Europe and like literally across the world to fill those spots, because they've, I think, struggled to hire. But I'm hoping we can do it locally, because, I mean, swimming is just such a life skill. Yeah, it's
cool. I wish that this was like a thing when I was younger, because, you know, frankly, I feel like, I don't know, being a lifeguard at one of the rec center or aquatic centers here in the district just seems so much more appealing than like working at Six Flags all summer. But that's just me.
Yeah. And also it makes for a hell of a college essay. You know, I mean, you're learning CPR, you're, you know, saving lives. I mean, it's a ton of responsibility for someone who's young. And I just think it sets you up so well in so many ways. You referenced this a bit earlier in terms of the trying to extend the hours for the rec centers, that it was to keep the youth aspect, at least was trying to keep kids out of trouble. The timing of the mayor's announcement, I think, was probably not a coincidence that when all the hullabaloo was going on nationally with the focus on the revised criminal code. Do you see this as a critical piece of that puzzle of dealing with the uptick in, I mean, it's technically a downtick in crime, most crimes, but the perceived uptick in crime, is that part of your thought process in getting behind this, or is it purely just, this is what the kids need and deserve?
Well, I think it's dual, right? I feel like kids need the opportunity and space to be kids. Period, full stop, right? I think a lot of young people in our community don't have that opportunity, that they're having to, because of whatever their home or life situation, many of them are having to assume more adult responsibilities earlier on and don't have the opportunities to just say like, hey, I'm going to go to the pool with my friends and we're just going to hang out and not think about anything else but this in this particular moment. So I think that on one side, DPR, I feel like, presents a really unique opportunity for us to expose kids in our areas to a variety of different things, whether it be, hey, you want to try out pickleball, you want to do volleyball, you want to do cheerleading, boxing, ice skating, tennis, you know, all of these different things that could provide an anchor in life outside of academics in terms of building discipline, building character, but also fitness and exercise and all of these pieces. Like, we need to give those opportunities to young people, particularly in our city. But on the other side too, we know that lots of things can happen when you have idle minds. And what we're seeing in terms of juvenile crime that's happening, and, you know, Chief Conte has spoken a lot about this as well, is that a lot of these incidents are much more impulsive than in the past. And what I mean by that is it's like crimes of opportunity, crimes that like, oh, we were just sitting on the stoop and we thought, let's do this thing, but it doesn't make any sense from a logical standpoint. Like, any rational person who sits down and thinks about it, like, it doesn't make any sense. And so what we've heard from community members is that young people feel like they need some place to go. And in the absence of that, that's how you get caught up in crew culture and all of these other things that might lead to you participating in a criminal act. You know, folks have talked about there used to be Boys and Girls Clubs and those have now closed. The rec centers used to be open longer and those had changed. So now we're trying to address some of those issues. So folks just have like a cool place to hang out. And I think that's fantastic. I think that's great. And it also kind of reminds me of, you know, one other thing that we kind of try to push outside of the DPR space is like, in what ways can we keep our schools open longer? So, you know, schools provide a lot of extracurricular activities, sports, other things. But let's say you're not the jock. Let's say, you know, you hand-eye coordination is not your strong suit. What opportunities are we providing for you that allows for you to, like, let's say your home life isn't great or you lack internet access at home. What is a safe space that we can provide for you after school that allows you to be productive and, you know, explore your interest areas and also stay out of trouble? So I think it's a double piece of one, let's expand and broaden the horizon in terms of access to opportunity. And two, if that keeps you out of trouble, that's great as well.
And one thing, I mean, efforts to give alternate things to do with free time have always been most important during the summer. Because there seems to be a correlation between comfortable weather and upticks in crime and idle hands and that kind of thing. What no one's talking about is this is the warmest winter we've had in years. And I wonder if there is any correlation at all with the perceived uptick in crime and the sort of opportunistic, impulsive things that people are doing, which just the fact is 50-something degrees out all winter.
Weird. You know, Josh, have you been outside today? It is not 56 degrees.
No, but February was the third hottest February.
Yes. You know, February is quite warm.
I do not think that's the major cause, but I do wonder if there is an element of that, because you can't tell me if it was 20 degrees for the last 3 months, folks would stay inside, you know? Anyway, that's just my little conspiracy theory. The other topic I wanted to hit with you mentioned in passing was you've reintroduced a bill to focus on to deal with out of school time for specifically for kids with IEPs. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the number in the bill is 1 out of 5 kids in DC has these kind of special needs, but our rec centers programs are not at all adapted to that statistic. And you have 8 co-sponsors. So the bill seems like would have a pretty good chance. Talk to me a bit about that need, about how you came to figure out that was an important need and how you're planning on tackling it.
Yeah. So I met with a group of families who have students who have IEPs in the district. And let me just say, right, to have an IEP, there's a variety and a range in terms of what the disability your student may be facing. For some, it may be a physical disability that you need some additional support in the classroom on. For others, it can be executive functioning or, you know, speech or, you know, something to that effect. So it varies. But what we were finding is that not only for DPR, but also our community-based organization partners that we use for out-of-school time, either after school or in the summer, were not very well equipped to handle a student who needed some additional accommodations. And it was a very much a surprise to me that as a city or as a, you know, quote unquote state from a OSSE standpoint, that we have no guidelines outside of the American Disabilities Act that provides some standards and legal protections in terms of what community-based organizations can and cannot do. No, you cannot turn away a student because of X. And looking at that. And so, you know, we have a number of families who felt like they were excluded, that they had no choice in an out-of-school time scenario because maybe they had a situation where the CBO let them sign up for the program, like took their money. And then, you know, 1 week in said, oh, you know what, this isn't going to work for us. Now they didn't get a refund from their money back. Right. And so the bill is designed to, number one, have OSSE develop some standards. We're going to educate folks on like what those standards are, but also for us to set up systems to help for CBOs who need additional technical assistance around how they serve students with special needs to make that available to them as well. So for instance, you might have a young person who needs visual aids in order to help communicate. Can that CBO contact OSSE to purchase the materials so that the young person can participate? You know, what are the additional things that are necessary and needed? And so I feel like if we're going to have a conversation about out of school time and making sure that we're increasing opportunities for all, it has to include all. We have to talk about, you know, students not being excluded because of having an IEP or disability.
Now, is this like with eight folks, you know, it seems like the bill would stand a pretty good chance. Is this something that you, but it won't be funded? Is this something you put in your letter to the mayor, or you're going to try to work with the chairman to kind of pre-fund, or is this something that might still be a couple of years out?
I don't think it's necessarily something that's going to be a few years out. We've had conversations with OSSE around this. I think it's a question of like, what's the number? It might be a situation where we are able to fund it and then we pass the bill after the fact. But what I don't want us to do is to get to next summer and not have resolved this issue.
Right.
That's key. Ideally, we would not get to next school year without having resolved this issue, because for a lot of families, they need after school care just as everyone else. You know, sometimes I think about the fact that so my oldest daughter, her school is over at 3:15. There are some families who have the flexibility to go pick up their child at 3:15 every day and go on about their day. Then there are the rest of us who, you know, work doesn't end at 3 o'clock in order to make that happen. And so what happens to those young people if they're not able to participate in after school programming? That kind of limits the availability and opportunities for their families. So that's my hope, is that by next school year, we have something in place. But certainly, I don't want to get to next summer and not have addressed this issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to, I think we skipped it last time, but two interviews ago, we did the fun closeout round, which you enjoyed. So we're going to do that real quickly before we run out of time.
Okay.
And similar to the last one, fun, which of your colleagues would you assign odd tasks to? Would you tackle odd tasks with? So I'm going to give you a task, and I want you to tell me which of your colleagues you would enlist in the effort.
Okay.
The first one is going on a camping trip, walk in the woods.
Cool. I'm going to say Charles on a camping trip. He is outdoorsy enough to be resourceful in that situation.
He'd be a help and not a hindrance.
Yeah. He also doesn't seem like he like scares easily, which I think you need like a calm soul who's not saying like, oh my God, what was that? Anytime that they hear something unusual outside.
Right. True. Okay. If you were on the phone with customer service and they just were not helping you out, call 800 number. And you're like, here, let me hand the phone to somebody. Who do you think would get your work done on that call?
Janice.
I knew you were going to say Janice. I just knew.
Yeah. Not only would Janice get it done, she'd probably get me a refund and like a gift card of some additional points for my troubles. Yeah, that's, you need a lawyer for that.
True. Okay. How about if you had to mediate a dispute, who would you pull in to get to a peaceful resolution of the dispute?
Oh, that's interesting. It's kind of a tie. I would say either Kenyon or Matt.
Okay.
Like Matt is very even keel of like, I hear you. Let's see where we can work, et cetera. Kenyon is also very similar. Like, let me hear all sides and kind of come to some solution here.
Okay. Whose Rolodex would you steal?
Oh. Probably Brooke. Yeah.
What do you think she has cooking in her Rolodex? That would
Brooke's from Connecticut. And there's a lot of people out of Connecticut.
Okay, seeking the Connecticut.
Yeah, but I also, though, Trayon similarly happens, like, he just knows people. So I think it would kind of be a toss-up between them.
Okay, and the very last one is, and this is based on a premise that is probably false, assume all your colleagues wrote poetry. Whose poetry would you want to read, and whose poetry would you run like the devil away from?
Robert strikes me as a like very thoughtful in the feelings. He also used to have locks back in the day, so I feel like he has a vibe there that I think would be great for poetry. I would stay away from Phil's poetry.
Yes. although a lot rhymes with spreadsheet, so you could always do that. So anyway, I think Phil's gonna run away with the whose poetry do you not want to read.
Wait, have you asked other people these questions?
I just debuted him with Robert White the other day.
Oh, and what did he say on poetry?
He wanted to read, well, I actually didn't ask him the whose poetry wouldn't you want to read. That's a new brainstorm. But the whose poetry he did want to read was Brandon Doe's, because he thought it would be full of vulgarity. Well, that's his answer. I'm not speaking to it. I'm not going there. But
Oh, man. Okay. At the end of your season, I hope that you publish like what everybody said in each one, because that's funny.
You asked that the last time we did this, and I literally have the spreadsheet open on my computer because I have to update it for everyone with their answers. But everyone loved the Fighting Barbarians question last round, and I think the poetry one is going to be the fun question this time. But anyway, thank you again for indulging me, particularly with the fun questions at the end. But we're out of time, over time, so we'll have to hit a Committee on Health priorities in a future interview.
Not a problem.
But listeners, thank you very much. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on SoundCloud or wherever you get your podcasts. Search under Hearing Council. Thanks again for joining us. Tune in next time. We're on DC Radio at 96.3 on your FM HD4 dial or at dcradio.gov. I'm Josh Gibson. This is not a council hearing. This is Hearing Council. Thank you, council member. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Take care.
Bye-bye.